This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable blade knives, fixed blade knives, and game processing kits. Now, we've all been there before, trying to field dress your wild game with a dull knife. This is where Outdoor Edge really steps in. With the Razor Safe system, you can have a brand new razor sharp blade with just the push of a button. No more dull blades and no more problems processing your wild game. To check out all of the products from Outdoor Edge, visit OutdoorEdge.com. And at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% off of your purchase.
Hey guys and gals, welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoor Podcast, where you will be educated, entertained, and equipped to get more out of your outdoor experience. So hold on tight, because here we go. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the podcast. This is the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast, and I'm your host, John Hudspeth. I'm very glad you guys are here with me today. I feel like I can finally kind of take a giant breath of relief. For those of you who are consistent listeners, y'all probably know what's going on. If there's any new people listening, just to give you a little update. So we're coming into the fourth week of October as I'm recording this. Since October 1st, I have been to 3 weddings, 2 funerals, my anniversary, and my wife's birthday, all in that short amount of time. In that same amount of time, I have got to hunt, I think, 2 mornings and 1 evening. That's it. This is probably by far the least I've ever gotten to hunt the first month of the season. And of course, it's like my first full hunting season having this podcast, so it doesn't make me look good. But all that stuff is behind me now. It's all out of the way. Wedding season's over. I have a big problem with all the ladies out there who think October is the only month of the entire year that you can get married. My wife is included in that. But as I've mentioned before, you know, my wife really wanted an October wedding. I was very against an October wedding, but she has an October birthday, and so I gave in, and so our wedding is the same week as her birthday. So kind of get a 2-for-1 there, because I was going to be, you know, having some trouble, some scheduling conflicts with her birthday anyway. So all that to say, all that stuff is behind me now. I am ready to hunt. I'm ready to go. Like, my season is really officially starting now. So I'm headed out this coming weekend, which will be the first weekend of muzzleloader season. And man, I can't even decide if I want to take my muzzleloader. I haven't got to do enough bow hunting yet. And so I'm kind of thinking about maybe just sticking with the bow this weekend and wait until the next weekend, Halloween weekend, to bust out the muzzleloader. Who knows? I love that weekend of Halloween. We'll talk about that in a second. Anyway, I don't want to get ahead of myself too much. But so that's what I've been up to. Not a lot to report. I have, you know, gone out to the ranch several times and done some scouting. Like I said, a little bit of hunting. I was up there on Sunday afternoon this last weekend. And I've talked about our river property, a new property we bought this year. We bought it for hay. It's on a river, has a center pivot and all that. But we just recently planted our fall crop, which is, oats and like a forage turnip, radish. I'm sorry, forage radish. And so anyway, I did a bunch of scouting around there because I've been trying to figure out if there's going to be deer on this property or not. There's almost no cover. It's just basically Bermuda pasture in every direction around us. There was one little corner on the neighbors that was pretty nasty this summer. I thought could hold a lot of deer, but I went and checked on it and they have brush hogged it because there's a lot of pecan trees. And so I assume they brush hogged it in preparation to go in there and harvest the pecans. And so I've had a camera out there for several months. I got one picture of one doe, and that was like 3 months ago. And so I checked that camera. I'd even poured some corn out in front of that camera trying to get something, got nothing. And I walked through the fields a bunch, not a single deer track. So I haven't completely given up on it, but as of right now, that property is just looking like it's not going to be a good hunting property, unfortunately. Been getting the other properties kind of ready to go still, doing some scouting, like I said, checking some cameras. I have some bucks kind of on the radar. They've still been pretty nocturnal. Like you've also heard me talk about, you know, our place is a true cattle place. You know, cattle have access to almost the entire thing. And even though we, you know, manage them really well and move them around, there's just not that much that grows up. And so I got a few little spots that I can kind of control and keep the cows out of. Just not a lot of daylight, buck activity, but hopefully as the temperatures cool down and we get closer to the rut, that's going to change. Of course this weekend, my first like full weekend to go hunting, it's supposed to get back up like into the upper 80s or something like that. And so, I am going to hunt this weekend, but not a lot of high hopes. You know, probably going to stay out of my good areas and wait for the conditions to get better. But, you know, we're not that far away from where it's going to be time to go in there anyway. And so I do want to touch on that a little bit before we get into the main part of the podcast. Just a few little quick rut reminders, rut tips, because we're just about there, guys. So I got four strategies here I want to touch on real quick before we get into the main podcast. And there's kind of, well, most of them are like calling techniques, just ways to get deer in front of you that a lot of people use. And I don't know if everybody necessarily knows how or when to use them. So I want to touch on them. Like I said, just real quick, we're going to kind of blow through this. So the first one is grunting or grunt tube. I think out of all of these, this one's probably the one that will work in the widest array of situations, you know, over the widest amount of time. Grunting something deer that they do mostly during the rut, but they will grunt other parts of the year, really year round. And so I think right now you definitely need to have a grunt tube with you at all times. I'm not a big fan of blind grunting. I know it can work, but I really like to use a grunt tube when I can actually see the deer. You know, if there's a buck out there and it doesn't look like he's going to come my way, you know, I'll throw a grunt or two out there, see how he responds. And again, that's kind of why I like to see the deer before I grunt, because deer are going to act, you know, differently depending on how they've experienced grunts in the past. So there was one really big buck last year I saw, grunted at him, and he immediately turned and ran away. I mean, he was out of there. But, you know, there's been plenty of other times where I've gunned a deer, they've looked my way and come right in. And so, like I said, I'm going to wait until I make sure that deer is not coming my way first and then grunt. And I want to be able to see them so that I know if I, you know, if they look like they're interested, you know, if they take a few steps towards you or something, maybe you throw out another one. But be patient. You know, you're not calling ducks, you're calling deer. They're not super vocal. And so take it easy and just kind of play the situation. The next one I want to talk about is rattling. We're coming up pretty darn quick to good rattle time. I normally don't like to rattle until at the earliest, usually like the 25th of October. I usually like to kind of wait a little later, usually like November 1st. It's just, if you do it too early, you're much more likely to spook a buck away than you are to bring them in, I think. Or, you know, they don't have that aggression built up yet, and maybe they're curious, but they're going to sneak downwind of you instead of maybe just coming in on a string like they might when their adrenaline's going and they're, you know, really fired up. And so, yeah, rattling, it's about that time. I know Texas A&M Galveston, and I believe maybe Mississippi State has done research on rattling, and pretty much all the research that's ever been done on rattling, they have agreed that as loud and as hard as you can do it is always better. There's no need to do the, you know, little soft tingling first, and then like pretty much every research project that has been done on rattling, just hit those antlers as hard as you can. You know, if you're on the ground or, you know, can like rake leaves with your foot or hit the branches on a branch or something like that, basically you want to be as loud and realistic as possible. And so I personally have never had much luck rattling deer in. I think it's just because I'm in a little bit lower deer density area. But it definitely can work. And especially, I think the further west you go, the better it works personally. You know, I've had some experience hunting a little further west, and it just seems like it works a whole lot better out there. So that's my two cents on rattling. Decoys. I have yet to kill a deer over a decoy, but that is definitely one of my goals. I bought one about 3 years ago, and I've tried it, you know, a couple times every year the past couple years. I don't think I've had the right situation when I've used it, but it is something I want to do so bad. I would just love to see a big old buck come, you know, swole walking into the decoy. So I don't want to give too much advice because, like I said, I have not been successful. I have done a bunch of research on it, and I think the keys there are, one, making it visible, you know, getting it in a place where the deer can see it from a long distance, because that's the whole point of it, is for it to bring deer in, you know, into range. And then from everything I've read, researched, seen, 9 times out of 10, a buck is going to approach a decoy from its head, or, you know, basically straight on somewhat. It's going to get to its head. And so what I like to do with mine when I set them up, whichever way I'm going to have that deer facing, I push it off to the opposite side a little bit. So just to simplify things, let's say that decoy is going to be facing to my right. I like to move it to my left a little bit so that when that buck comes and circles in and moves over to its head, it's basically straight in front of me instead of off to my side, you know, out in front of that decoy. And so, like I said, the decoy is a tool. And so if you can use it to try to position that deer into a better spot for you to get a shot, that's the whole goal. The last thing I want to touch on real quick is scents. And I'm talking about like artificial lures, you know, the little glass bottles you buy at the sporting goods store. And personally, I am not a big fan of these. I've bought plenty of them over the years. I've done the whole, you know, scent drag thing where you tie a rag onto your boot and walk across the field and stuff like that. I've just never had a whole lot of success with them. And I think the more pressured place you hunt, the less they work. You know, I've scouted pieces of public land and you just see those little white scent wicks just hanging all over the place. And I've found empty bottles and stuff. And I think the deer just get onto those scents, you know. I'm not going to say they're not good, but they obviously are not probably as good and fresh as a live deer that just laid that scent down a few minutes before. And so I think people overuse them, like I said, especially in, you know, more hunted areas. You know, if you're fortunate enough to hunt a big piece of private property and you know who's been there, who hasn't, and who's used what, I think they can be a little more useful in that situation just because the deer aren't as wise to them. You know, they haven't smelt that smell 1,000 times, you know, over the last mile of the trail. And so I think they do have their place. If I was going to use one, I think the two things I would use it for is, one, probably on a scrape, you know, just to add a different scent in there, maybe make them think that a different buck that they don't recognize is in there. And then the second one is just to get a deer to stop, you know, wherever, maybe you got a shooting lane or a tight spot or something like that where you kind of know the deer's going to go through anyway, putting some scent out there just to make him, you know, hit the brakes, stop a little more. I mean, it's not necessarily natural, but more natural than you doing the old meh. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily lock them onto your location either. You know, if you make a noise, they're going to stop and look at you. And, you know, then you got the chance of them jumping the string or something like that. And so, again, not a big scent guy, but I do think they have their place. So I just wanted to touch on those things real quick because we're getting into the heart of deer season, the heart of the rut. And so, yeah, that's my 2 cents on that stuff. Now we're going to jump into the real podcast. We have a returning guest. We're talking to Tyrell Roy. And, man, I have such a hard problem saying that name. Too many R's. Tyrell Roy and his wife, Carly. And they did something fantastic. They doubled on the same hunt out of the same tree. And so he shot me over the picture, and I was like, man, I got to get you on here, this story. So he was actually out in the wheat field. Him and his family are wheat farmers. And so he was actually taking his dinner break and called me from the field. So I really appreciate them taking time out of their busy schedule to talk to us. And yeah, and then towards the end, or after, you know, they kind of get into the story, we kind of go back and dissect it and talk about some things that I think everybody could learn from, you know, some things that led to their success and how they got not one, but 2 really, really nice bucks in front of them, you know, on the same hunt. And so stick around all the way to the end. And yeah, that's going to be about it. Get out there and hunt, guys. It's that time. Hunt smart, hunt hard, hunt long. You know, if you normally sit till 9, sit till 10, just be out there as much as humanly possible, because we are coming into the best time of the entire year to be in the whitetail woods. So that's going to do it for me. That's going to do it for my intro. I hope you guys enjoyed this. Here is my interview with Tyrell and Carly Roy. Hey, everybody. How are you guys doing today? We are talking to Tyrell and Carly Roy. How are y'all doing today?
We are doing good.
Doing good.
Good. And Tyrell, you said y'all are out in the field right now, right?
Yeah, I've been on the tractor just about all day long planting wheat, and Carly just showed up with dinner.
Very nice. Very nice. Always nice to have somebody bring you out dinner to the field when you're working late. So I assume y'all have GPS equipment on the tractor and everything.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm finishing up a 400 acre field right now, so definitely makes the job a lot easier.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. Carly, have you just been hanging out at home and relaxing, or you been working too?
I've been working a little bit. I am a stay at home mom, but we have a pretty big house renovation going on right now on a property we just bought. So I've been splitting my time there, and then I do a little helping on the farm, so that as well.
Gotcha. Awesome. Awesome. I'm sure Tyrell's very thankful for you bringing him some food out there. So.
Yeah, definitely a highlight of the day, lunch and dinner.
Yep, absolutely. Well, cool, guys. Well, Tyrell, you sent me a photo a few days ago, and I wanted to get you on the podcast as soon as I could. And you guys have a pretty awesome story for us today. And so I'm going to kind of cut to the chase and really just hand the keys over to you guys and let y'all kind of tell your own story. So you guys, like I said, I'm handing it over to you. Either one of y'all can start and just kind of walk me through what happened to y'all.
Okay, sounds good. I'll kind of tell the beginning. I'll let Carly take it over at her point. But so, like Carly said, we're renovating a house and planting, and I'm planting wheat right now, so it's been super busy. And that wasn't looking like I was going to have a whole lot of time to hunt this fall. I had one evening, Carly went to the city, and she accidentally took the house keys with her, so I wasn't able to get in the house that evening.
Uh-huh.
So I called my brother up, and we went out after this tall, narrow deer that I wanted to hunt. And one thing I've learned, hunting over the years, is that every deer is different. They have their own personality, the way they go about things. Mm-hmm. But most of the mature deer that I've hunted has really played the wind. So when we went to hunt this deer, he was coming into this turnip plot that I had, and I assumed that he was coming in on the downwind side every time. So we set up on the downwind side of this plot, and he just came straight into the plot, not playing the wind at all. So it kind of caught us by surprise. And I wasn't set up like close enough to shoot the food plot, but we could kind of see into it. And I was expecting him to circle downwind of it. So we watched him in this food plot, and they would there was a couple bucks with him, and they would feed down the plot, and then they would feed back. It was super windy. They were kind of on edge and always moving around. So I decided that I would get down out of my tree and try to sneak up a little closer to the food plot, being that it was super windy and I knew I was going to have a very limited amount of time to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So, and my brother Shane's in the tree with me filming. So I'm going to climb down, and he's going to hang my bow down, and we're going to try to sneak up. So I start climbing down, and he has a GoPro going kind of facing me. So I look around and start climbing down, and then as I'm a step or two down, that buck had just come off the food plot and went straight to our tree and was literally 5 yards from the tree.
Mm.
And I'm climbing down, and Shane's trying to get my attention, and I can't hear him, and I step on the ground and hear that buck snort, and he didn't know what it was. It's super thick where we were.
Uh-huh.
He didn't know what it was for sure. He didn't smell it, but he heard me and saw me. He ran 30 yards and stopped, looking all around, and then he just walked off, mm-hmm. you know, over this little hill. So I was disgusted with myself. I knew better than to get down from the tree and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So Shane gets down, and it's like, it's still like 40 minutes before dark. So we kind of ease up toward the plot, and there's some other bucks out there. And this other buck comes in, and I end up shooting this other buck, a wide 10. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty disgusted with myself for botching that opportunity on that tall, narrow deer.
Yeah.
So we recover that deer, and then a week goes by, and we have, like, the perfect weather. And so Carly very graciously encouraged me to go after that deer. And again, but this time she was going to go with me. So we go back to that food plot. And this time I sat right on the edge of the plot. And I don't know how long we'd been there, a couple hours. Mm-hmm. We'd been in the tree hadn't seen a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And then finally, you know, the deer started moving. And he did the exact same thing. He didn't circle downwind or anything. He just came straight into the plot. Obviously, he was very comfortable in that environment. Mm-hmm. And so he really surprised us. He came right down the edge of the plot. Carly was filming, and we didn't see him until he was probably like 40 yards from us. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of odd. One thing I've noticed, if we were kind of talking about it, whatever, but I cut some trees down, or not trees, but like some bigger limbs. They still had a lot of leaves on them. Well, these deer just came right to those trees and were eating the leaves off these trees. I'm like at the bottom of our tree, basically. Huh. It's kind of crazy.
Uh-huh.
And so we were pretty pinned down. There was deer all around us. And of course, we're trying to get the shot on film. Carly's filming. And he's in front of us for a while, just kind of milling around, and then finally gives me a steep quartering away shot at like 18 yards, and I heart shot him.
Nice.
It's kind of funny because Carly thought I missed because she was watching through the camera viewfinder, which is a lot harder to see detail.
Uh-huh.
Thought I had shot under the deer, and he takes off, but I knew I'd hit him. I could see my arrow was there all bloody. Mm-hmm. But when this deer had come in, like, all summer long, he spent the summer on a bean field, like, a quarter mile away. And there was this other deer that he was with pretty much all summer. It was just a mainframe 10, and he had, like, an inline point off his G4. And we had watched this deer all summer, but he hadn't been down to my food plot yet. But when the tall, tight deer walked out, this deer wasn't far behind him. And he was close when I shot the tall and tight deer, and you can kind of see him in the camera viewfinder as he runs off with the deer that I had just shot.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we're standing up and, you know, I was celebrating. I was pumped, especially after that deer gave me the slip the week prior, and then to go out again and have a chance at him again.
Mm-hmm.
So we're, you know, we're excited, talking, and whatever. And it was early. It was like 5:30 when this happened. So then we were like, well, should we get down? Should we still have light? Because we walked the film back, and yeah, I'm like, that's a dead deer. And we thought we heard him crash, too. So, like, do we get down and go try to find him, or do we wait till dark, you know, and see if anything else comes in? There was also some turkeys around, and Carly wanted to shoot a turkey. So we're like, we'll wait here a little while and see what happens. So not 15 minutes later, that deer that was the deer that Carly ended up shooting comes out and kind of walks along the west edge of the plot and goes back into the woods. And then, so we're like, we're definitely just going to sit here for a while and see what happens. So I'll let Carly kind of
Okay, so we had that deer kind of came out, the one that I was going to try to shoot. He came out at the trees again, probably like 20 minutes after we had decided that we were going to stay in the tree. But then he went back into the trees. And so I was kind of like you know, this might not work out, but we're just going to wait it out. And so eventually he did come back out, and he just hung out in the food plot for a while, but he kept making his way gradually towards us. And that is, I consider myself a beginner bow hunter, and that is, like, I feel like the worst thing is when you watch your target buck for, you know, 15 minutes or however long. It seems like an eternity.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say you're hunting a beginner buck either. Very nice deer.
I was, so eventually he made his way towards us, and we're trying to film it all, which adds a little of a different aspect to it, you know. Because what I can see, Tyrell can't always see from that stand or whatever. I mean, we're in the same tree, but different angle. So he comes super close, and I drew back. I want to say I drew back and let down three different times before I actually drew back to shoot him. I would draw back, and then he would either walk out of range or walk out of camera, the camera angle, or he wouldn't give me what I thought would be a good shot. You know, he was quartering towards me too much or directly away or whatever. But eventually I pulled back for the fourth, I think it was the fourth time, and he was, I think, 20 yards, and Tyrell stopped him, and then I shot him. And in the beginning, I thought the shot might be a little high. Mm-hmm. It did look high, and I didn't get a ton of penetration, but being in the tree, that angle really helped me. So we waited for a while and got down, and we pretty much tracked our, it was crazy. Our blood trails from our deer were about 5 yards apart. I mean, they ran almost the same exact trail. Like, right. At some point we couldn't figure out which blood was from which deer. So it was pretty crazy, and it was a good experience. A lot of times we don't get to go out together anymore, having a baby and, or a toddler. It was pretty special.
Yeah. I think that's a cool lesson too for people. Is like, you know, like you said, both y'all's deer went to the same place. I think that's probably something that happens in a lot of places. Like, deer know where they're safe. You know, they know where they feel safe, and like, if they get injured or hurt or whatever, like, they're going to go to that place. And a lot of times that's, you know, the same place no matter what deer it is, because they know where it's safe.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah, it was. When we got down, we found Tyrell's deer probably 10 yards into the woods or 15 yards into the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were going to back out at least for a few hours, maybe even overnight, on my deer just to make sure we didn't bump him, you know. And but Tyrell took about, I don't know,
I went like 20 yards inside the woods just to try to see the direction that he had gone.
And we saw him laying back there about 50 yards past where his buck had laid. So
nice.
You know, it's kind of a crazy, because her deer died like literally like 12 feet from this old silo. And so this all took place on a farm we call the homestead that has been in her family since the home or the land run. They have the original deed to this property, and there's the old homestead back there. There's an old fallen down house, and it's all grown up now. But there's this old brick silo back there, and this deer died like 12 feet from it.
That is
kind of
cool.
Crazy to think you're like hunting in what used to be a yard, basically.
That's really cool.
A lot of history. Yeah,
gotcha. It's really special to. We don't take that for granted, having that. You know, having that history, and then now we take our daughter out there. It's just really special to us.
That is.
Yeah,
really,
I think our daughter's on, like, Carly's side. She's our daughter's the eighth generation. You know, in the farm around here and stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah, so they don't have the land anymore, but I might have mentioned this last time Tyrell was on, but my grandma, she still has her family's certificate from the Oklahoma Land Rush. And so, but we don't have the cool part of also still having the land. So, but it is a neat piece of history. So, I'm going to ask Carly this. Carly, which one of y'all's deers are bigger?
Tyrell's is.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
Okay. His deer is bigger and definitely more unique.
Yeah, it's very unique. That's a really cool looking deer. But, I mean, yours is definitely not too shabby either, so you definitely shouldn't feel bad. So,
I feel like any time I get to go out and, you know, have a crack at mature deer, some of the deer that we're hunting, you know, aren't, they're super old, but their racks are, you know, not huge.
Yeah.
But at this point in my bow hunting, I don't know if you say career or whatever, I feel like every time I go out, I learn something new. So
that's good.
It's just a great opportunity, really.
Yeah, that's part of it. I do have a few questions. Go ahead, Tyro. Yeah. I got to
say, it's definitely been fun. Sorry about that. It's definitely been fun to see Carly, progress as a bow hunter. Because when I first met her, she had killed some deer, but never with a bow. So, you know, I bought her a bow, and we got it set up. And she ended up, so her first buck is a dandy. And she went out early in the morning by herself. I had to go to work and shot this buck all by herself, you know. And then just to see it progress and then kind of see the confidence go down. And then this year, the confidence has just gone, you know, up so much because she's just been shooting does and every raccoon. And she's deaf on raccoons, let me tell you.
Nice.
Awesome. Yeah. So it's been pretty cool to watch that.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's always fun to watch watch a new hunter blossom. Not that you are necessarily a new hunter, but a new weapon for you. So, well, cool. Well, I got a few quick questions for you. One, I know you're a recent saddle guy, Tyrell. Were y'all in saddles when you shot these? I know you mentioned you moved trees.
Well, so when Shane and I went out on the first sit for that tall and tight buck, I was in a saddle on that hunt. And then I wasn't expecting to go out for a while. So during that week, I went up there and hung a stand, and then I took a stand in with me.
Gotcha.
When Carly and I went in there. So we had two stands.
Okay.
Because my brother was using my saddle.
Gotcha.
All right.
Gotcha. I was just curious. You know, obviously it didn't make a big difference, but. And then.
Have you hunted out with a saddle?
I still have not hunted out of one, so I want to. This summer, a buddy of mine got one, and we went out to Broken Bow for a weekend, and he brought it. And, you know, we had a big pine tree in the yard of the cabin, so I climbed up into one and hung in one. And I will say, I mean, it was incredibly comfortable. Like, it was even more comfortable than I thought it would be. And shooting out of it didn't seem as awkward as I thought. That's probably the biggest thing holding me back from buying one. Shooting to my left was awesome. Even shooting directly behind me was awesome. Shooting to the right was a little weird, you know?
Yeah. Yep. But it's that shooting to the right has got me in trouble before.
Yeah.
Well, like last year I shot three bucks out of the saddle and and one I had a hard time getting on because he was off my offside, you know?
Right. Yeah. So I'm not
the mobility of them. Is just awesome.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely get that, and that's one of the other things holding me back is we have one property that we're trying to sell. The other property that we're kind of moving to, there's not very much big timber on it, and so like most of the trees, if I need a stand there, I have one because there's just not that many trees to choose from. But I think when we sell that other property, I think we are, you know, going to look for some additional property. And so if we get a more timbered place, I'll probably be in the market for a saddle. So,
yeah, gotcha.
My other question was, obviously, you know, y'all are wheat farmers, you know, like you're currently planting, you know, thousands of acres of wheat, but you mentioned how you're hunting these over turnips. And so like, do you think that just having something a little different than what they can find everywhere else, you know, helped attract these deer to that spot?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Every farmer around here, for the most part, grows wheat.
Right. I was about to ask that. I assume if y'all do, everybody else around you probably does.
Right, yeah. And the deer eat wheat. There's nothing wrong with planting wheat as a food plot, but I'm not going to plant wheat when there's literally thousands and thousands of acres of wheat around me.
Yeah.
Now, I do have one spot where there's nothing around, so I'll plant some wheat in with my other stuff. But, right now, people are cutting soybeans, and wheat is just being planted and starting to come up here and there. So it's kind of like a transition time.
Mm-hmm.
And like every buck in that section will show up on my food plot. I have like a 4-acre food plot, mm-hmm. that's just turnips and radishes and clover and winter peas and stuff like that. Just something different.
Mm-hmm.
So do you hammer it?
Gotcha. Yeah, that's something I've been playing with a little bit, which, you know, I'm not in an ag area. I'm in a cattle pasture area. So you plant just about anything, you know, you're going to get some deer on it.
Right.
So, but yeah, something that I've kind of noticed, or not necessarily noticed a little bit, but been worried about is planting turnips in a hog area. You know, like hogs don't really mess with weed or oats or anything like that. But I, you know, I think once that turnip gets to a big size, those hogs figure it out. And, so I am a little worried about, I did plant some turnips this year. And so I'm kind of curious to see if they figure it out or not. So,
yeah, I'll have to follow along and see, see if they do. I'd be interested to see that too.
Yep. So
I have never thought about that.
Mm-hmm. So that's,
we're starting to get some hogs up here. We're like one of the last two counties in Oklahoma to not have hogs,
man.
And recently, several have been killed right around us. So,
gotcha. Well, get to them early if you can. Call the state. You know, tell the state to get the helicopters out there. So, but
yeah.
Well, cool, guys. I think that's gonna about do it. Unless you guys have some last minute insight or anything.
No. We definitely feel very blessed to live up here and get to do what we do and share it with others and build relationships through it.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a blessing.
Yeah. So I thought of one last question. Sorry, I know we were just kind of closed out there. I thought of one more. You were talking about the deer eating the leaves from the limbs you had cut.
Yeah.
Do you happen to know what kind of tree that was?
Yeah, it's some kind of elm. I can't remember what.
Hmm.
Some kind of an elm tree.
Gotcha.
One problem that we have around here is a high deer population.
Yeah.
So, like, if you look in the trees, you can see, like, the browse line on some of the trees, especially, like, the elms and different ones that they eat. And I've noticed that before. Like, I'll cut some limbs down, and the deer will eat it. And Shane and I set up there, I cut some limbs down on the edge of the field.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Carly and I went back and set up closer by where those limbs were, I could tell that the limbs were just picked clean.
Hmm.
And then I cut a few fresh limbs, and man, there are some little bucks and does just camping out down there, eating those leaves like crazy.
Yeah. I've heard of people doing that, like up in the Northeast and stuff, where they have, you know, higher deer densities and stuff, but I've never heard of it in Oklahoma. So if you're in the Northwest part of the state, you might give that a try.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yep. Alrighty, well, second outro here. Thank you guys for coming on, and I do want to give you a chance, if you want to shout out your Instagram and even your brother's, you know, his photography page and stuff. Just, you know, if people wanted to follow along with your adventures, where can they reach you guys?
Yeah, so my Instagram is Tyrell Roy, and I'm kind of devil for you in my posting or whatever on there, but My brother's Instagram is Shane Roy, and he posts some cool stuff and some links to some videos and stuff that he does. And then
my name is just Carly Roy on there. Carly.n.roy, I think, is my username. So.
Awesome. Yep.
Very cool. And I got your brother's number from you. I need to give him a call. Maybe we'll have him on next week, because he's laid some down too. So.
Yeah.
Let's see,
he's a killer.
He is, and I guess you're tagged out now, huh?
Yeah, I am.
Man,
if we didn't have this huge house project, I'd be a little depressed about it. But
yep, I was about to say
I
that's.
I literally went out two sits and shot 2 bucks this year. It's kind of crazy.
That's incredible, man. That's going to be a long dry spell till next October, though.
Oh yes, it is.
Yeah. Well, cool, guys. I appreciate y'all coming on, and thanks for telling your story with everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having us.
What an awesome story, man. I have a hard enough time trying to get one buck to come by my tree, much less two in the same day. So awesome story. Thank you guys for coming on. Thank you, listeners, for listening to it. If you guys are having some success out there, please, please let me know. Send me a message or text or whatever. Get a hold of me. And, you know, maybe I can have some more of you guys on that are listening. Because I love hearing these stories and I love learning from y'all. You know, Oklahoma is so diverse, like we talk about all the time, so diverse, and there's so many different ways to get it done. So yeah, I absolutely love it. I'd love to hear from people who maybe were successful in the bear woods or antelope, elk, whatever it is. Yeah, just get in touch with me if you had some success this season, because I love to hear about it. So that's going to do it for this week. Actually, I take that back. If you are here for strictly hunting content, you can go ahead and leave. If you want to hear a little bit about college football, stick around for just a minute. Guys, what a season. What a season. What is going on? My Aggies upset Alabama after losing some games that they shouldn't have lost. OU had an amazing game against Texas, pulled out the win. Spencer Rattler gets benched. LSU was doing terrible and then beats Florida out of nowhere. Oklahoma State, where'd y'all come from? Undefeated so far. Man, I love college football. I haven't got to watch very much because I've had the same reason I haven't got to hunt very much, just all these events. But I am loving all the craziness. I'm a crazy college football fan. I guess crazy in the sense of, like, I love the chaoticness, you know, of who's going to make it to the playoffs, who's not. You know, this highly ranked team gets beat by a nobody and all that stuff. So, yeah, I hope you guys, if you're still listening, I hope you are enjoying this college football season. And I cannot wait to see what's going to end up happening. My prediction, if I had to throw one out there, I'm all about Georgia right now. Like, not necessarily a huge Georgia fan, but I think they have an amazing team. I'm really curious to see how Alabama's going to bounce back. I think they learned a valuable lesson that they needed to learn, getting beat by A&M. You know, I think they have a lot of young players that thought they were invincible, and now they know that they're not. So I think that's going to kick them into a whole nother gear. So Alabama and Georgia are both going to be tough. I don't know about Ohio State. You know, they've kind of picked things up here recently, but I just don't know. I just don't see it. I know a lot of people do. I don't. OU, I don't know what to think about y'all. I've talked about how I'm not the biggest OU fan. You know, I think with Spencer Rattler, it was not going to work out. This new was Caleb Williams, the new young guy. Man, he's doing good. He's doing good, but he's a little inexperienced. You know, he only has two or three games under his belt. And so I just don't know if he has what it takes to really compete, when, you know, once they get towards the end of the season. So, but yeah, crazy college football. I absolutely love it. I hope you hunting people who were here just for the hunting didn't mind that I did that. And I hope you college football fans stick around for it. So anyway, that's going to be the official end of this podcast. I'm done. I'm about to turn it in, and I will be hunting my butt off this weekend. So love to keep you guys up to date and posted. Keep listening. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you for supporting this podcast, and I will see you guys next week.